The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
So this morning we'll continue with this koan that we've been looking into, which I think I mentioned, or maybe David mentioned, it appears in two different koan collections that we use in Boundless Way when we're studying koans formally: the Blue Cliff Record and the Book of Serenity. And I always think, and I think I've already said this, that when a koan shows up like this in more than one collection, it's something that a lot of people were interested in. The Blue Cliff Record is a Rinzai text. It was put together by a teacher named Shui Do, who was in the Linji Rinzai lineage. And the Book of Serenity is a Soto text, and it was put together by our old friend Hong Zhe, who collected 100 koans and wrote poems about each one. And later, another teacher in Hong Zhe's lineage, Wan Song, wrote introductions and commentaries. So when we work with this case in Boundless Way, they're identical. The one in the Book of Serenity and the one in the Blue Cliff Record. But in the actual text of the Book of Serenity, this koan appears twice as long as the one in the Blue Cliff Record. And I'm going to read that one to you today and look into it a little bit and maybe look into Hong Zhe's poem about it. So in the Book of Serenity, it's case number 30. The introduction. Obliterating all oppositions. Cutting off both sides. Smashing the mass of doubt. How does that require a single phrase? The capital city is not an inch of a step away. The great mountain only weighs 3 pounds. But tell me, based on what order can one dare to speak this way? And then the case. A monk asked Da Sui, when the fire at the end of an eon rages through the whole universe, destroying it, is this destroyed or not? Da Sui said, destroyed. The monk said, then it goes along with that? Da Sui said, it goes along with that. A monk asked Long Ji, when the fire ending the eon rages through and the whole universe is destroyed, is this destroyed or not? Long Ji said, not destroyed. The monk said, why is it not destroyed? And Long Ji said, because it is the same as the universe. And here is Hong Zhe's poem. Destroyed, not destroyed. Going along with that, the billion world universe. In their phrases, after all, there's no hook and chain action. Their feet are much obstructed by entangling vines. Do you understand or not? For a matter which is distinctly clear, punctiliousness is extreme. Those who know the heart, bring it forth. Don't haggle. You'll lose to me buying and selling at the market. So as we've been saying, this koan, while a little bit simple and straightforward, is not at all simple and straightforward. And when we add the second dialogue with Long Ji and another monk, perhaps, or the same monk, we don't know, then we begin to look into this matter in a different way. When the great fire rages through everything, is it destroyed or not? This is the question. All of us know this deep in our heart. And I love Hongzhi's little admonition to us. Those who know the heart, bring it forth. This is not a matter that can be understood by the ordinary mind. By the mind that, as Hongzhi says, haggles in the marketplace. The mind that we've been trained to favor. The one that figures things out, makes plans. So useful, but not when it comes to awakening to the great way. Not useful at all because it keeps dragging us down into this or that. Many of you know that the first koan that we work with traditionally in our school anyway is the koan mu, where a student comes forward to the great teacher Jiajo and says, does a dog have the Buddha nature? And one of you said to me, and I think the same thing, it's a little bit like he's saying, does a dog have the Buddha nature? I'm just asking for a friend. I'm asking for the dog. But what he really means, of course, is the question we all ask. And it doesn't matter what form this question takes, but there is a questioning in all of our hearts. What is the meaning of life? Who am I? The teachings all say that we're all Buddhas, but are you kidding? Look at me. Look at my mind. Look at how busy my mind is. Look at how I keep getting caught in all these traps. That's not my imagination of what a Buddha should be like. Buddhas don't get caught in all this thinking. Buddhas don't get upset. Buddhas don't cry or yell out or say aggressive or passive-aggressive things. Buddhas don't hurt other people. Buddhas are not consumed by grief. But the reality is, and this can only be discovered by the discovery itself, the uncovering. The moment that we recognize that everything we encounter is the Dharma, that even the self-construction is the Buddha. How could this be? Does a dog have the Buddha nature? This poor fellow asks. Well, really asking, who knows, whatever the question is for you. Really? Me? Is this stuff in Buddhism really true? What are you guys talking about? What is it? What is it? What is it? What? Or who? Or I don't get it. Show me the path so I can get it. Does a dog have the Buddha nature? Will the world be destroyed? Will it be destroyed? Whatever this is, it is. My life, the life of all human beings, the planet, the earth. The scientists tell us that the earth will be consumed in a supernova many, many years from now. Will everything that we've done on this planet disappear in that great fire? What is it? What is it? And a Zen student at a certain point gives up trying to figure it out and just makes themselves into a ball of questioning. We call it the great doubt. We stop trying to figure things out, or we see that all the figuring out has gotten us nowhere. And we realize that the figuring it out will also burn in the kalpa fire. All of it will go. All of it will disappear. When Jiajo answers that yearning, questing monk with the word mu, which in Japanese means not or non or no, sounds like a negation. Nope, nope, nope. Dogs, nope. No Buddha nature, nope. But what is he really saying no to? When we look into this koan together in formal practice, we look into what the monk is asking and what Jajo is responding. And we do this with all the koans. What is this monk asking when he says, in the great kalpa fire, will it all go? Will it all be destroyed? And as we mentioned yesterday in Japanese, just the word "eh," but it's often translated as yes, or destroyed, or it's all going to go. Yes, yes, yes. Gone, gone, gone. As the Heart Sutra says at the end, gate, gate, paragate, parasangate, bodhisvaha. Gone, gone, completely gone, altogether gone. And bodhisvaha, yes, yippee, whoa, how great is this? All gone, all gone. Wait a minute, no, I want to hold on to it. I don't get it. I don't get Zen. Come on. But what if it does all go? What if we really get into this place of embracing the reality of all of it? All the stuff we work so hard, we're working so hard to wake up. Working so hard to be good people, to figure out how to be kind and compassionate. And Yamada Cohen, a teacher in our related school, says, compassion is unbound. All these things we're trying to be just naturally occur. The work is not to busy ourselves with trying to figure things out. It is so simple. But it's really unbelievable. I don't want it to end, though. I don't want to die. I don't want all my people in my family for generations to come to die. I don't want the earth to be destroyed. I don't want the sun to explode. I don't want the kalpa to end. The mind gets really big in its imagination at this point, but Zen keeps directing us here. In this moment, what is it that is ending? What is it that's being destroyed? Well, the breath comes into the body, and then it goes out. Where does it go? And we could make up all kinds of stuff about that. But then, before we know it, and you can try this, just stop breathing for a little while, the body takes over and goes another in-breath, so trustworthy, until the very last out-breath. Any of us have been lucky enough to be present when somebody is dying. Know that moment when the breath goes out and we wait. Is there going to be another breath? Will the world start all over again? Will this person's life begin again? Will it happen? Will the breath come back into the body? And it's almost unbelievable, the moment when the breath does not return. But as long as we're alive, it returns. Destruction is followed by emptiness, which is then followed by rebirth, recreation, everything coming back in. The breath goes out, and no matter how long we pause, as long as we're alive, the breath comes back in. And this is the teaching of everything being like this. The sun goes up, and the sun goes down. Where does it go before the discovery of the turning of the earth around the sun? It was believed that the sun disappears under the horizon and then is reborn in the morning. Not a bad myth, and something really true about it. Because human beings, we can't really understand it, that the sun is always shining, that the compassion that fills the universe is always present, that the Buddha nature is always here, but it doesn't look like what we think it looks like. We think, but war, but famine, but destruction, nuclear bombs, terrible suffering. This isn't compassion. I want it to be a certain way. When we practice Zen, we face into not the way we want things to be, but the way they actually are. And our heart breaks, but it breaks open. I should say the heart breaks and it breaks open. Both things are true. If you prevent your heart from breaking, it won't break open. If you're just longing to break open, the longing will take the place of the breaking open. Some of you know the wonderful poem by Rumi called Love Dogs, where there's a fellow who's praying to Allah all day long. He just chants and prays, and somebody questions him about it, says, "What are you doing? Allah doesn't need you to pray to him. Cut it out. Why are you doing this?" And later in the story, Allah comes and says, "Why'd you stop praying to me? What's going on? I miss this." And he, "Well, I got told that you don't really need it." And, "Oh, you don't understand. Your prayer of longing for my presence is my presence. The longing itself, like a dog that's howling for its master, that howling is the love and longing for the master, already complete in the longing." How amazing this is, this teaching that transcends all forms of religion and spirituality. That what you think is getting in your way is the very thing that you're looking for. How could this be? How could my insecurities and my history and my endless work on the self-construction, how could this be the very thing that is the Buddha that I've been looking for? It doesn't make sense. And how wonderful that Longji, in the second version of the story, says the exact opposite thing. Will it all burn up in the Kalpa fire? No, it won't. But why not? Why not? Well, because it's all the universe. It is the universe. It is already here. We might like this answer better, but it's important, as Hongjir points out to us, to see that falling on one side or the other is also not it. Destroyed, not destroyed. The breath enters the body and leaves the body. The life is lived and ends, and something happens later. The day begins, and we live through it, and then at night we go to sleep. The sun sets, and then the sun rises again. I love this story, and I've told it before, about when I was doing anthropology fieldwork in the mountains in Peru, in the Andes. And I met a Catholic priest who had been doing missionary work in the Peruvian jungle, and he came up to the to Lake Titicaca, where I was, up way high in the Andes. And he came up for the solstice, to celebrate the solstice with the native population there, the Quechua Indians. And he participated in this ceremony where everybody made lots and lots of noise begging the sun to come up, because this was in the summer, but it's their winter, so it was the winter solstice, because this was on the other side of the planet. And the shortest day of the year. And I asked this Roman Catholic priest, "Do you believe in this stuff? Do you believe that all this yelling and screaming and begging, the calling out again, like the dog to its master, calling out to the sun to return, the great sun god Inti Raymi, these people who are ostensibly Catholic, but poof, not really, going back eons to their original religion, always held in their hearts, begging, please come back." And then the next day, of course, it was a minute longer. The priest said, "Well, I grew up in this culture. I love Catholic practices. I'm a priest. And also, we've done this every year that I've been alive, and it's worked every time. Who am I to stop it?" Indeed. Who am I to stop calling out, to stop calling out, begging for the return? The return of the in-breath, the return of the sun, the return of the awakened heart, the heart of the Buddha that we have touched. Every single one of us in this room, I know this, has touched at least briefly in our lives, and this brief touch, which may even be consciously forgotten, propels us on our way, not somewhere else, but back home. Back home to the original nature, to the source of everything that arises, the aliveness, the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth turning. Always returning, and yet we have to call out to it. We have to ask these questions. We have to wonder. As Hongzhi says in another place, we have to wander into the center of the circle of wonder. We have to be part of this endless questioning and doubting until it all wears itself out and we realize, oh, it's been here the whole time. And then we forget it because it's so unbelievable and we have all these habit patterns of thinking. And then we sit upright and still and it returns to us. Always the returning. We return to our breath and body, to our question. And it reveals itself. What is this it? All of these people ask. Wansong, who put this collection together, thinks it's really interesting that Shuido, who put together the Blue Cliff record, these were fairly contemporary folks, didn't mention the story about Longji. But he explains it, and I've never seen Wansong talk about Shuido before. Maybe he does in other places, first time I noticed it. But of course, they're all, even though they're in different sects, as we say, they're all contemporaneous. They're all practicing the Great Way together in China. And he said, I guess he just hadn't heard the story about Longji. That's why Shuido didn't include it. But Wansong says, for me, I feel that the reason Hongzhi included it was that he had heard it, and he was impressed by showing both sides. Well, we can't know what any of these people were thinking or feeling, but I can say that I'm impressed by the showing both sides. Both are true. The world will be utterly destroyed. All of us in this room in 100 years, pretty likely, unless medical science does some very interesting things, will be gone. Every one of us. I love that mortality statistic. Mortality among human beings is 100%. And yet, in this moment, we are alive. We have an opportunity to mysteriously encounter this great way. We have this particular way of doing it here in Zen, of really not doing anything. Or, as Linji likes to say, doing nothing, sitting up, even during a Dharma talk, not moving, not looking around, not looking somewhere else, staying present, taking the backward step, coming home to the self that existed before the self-construction began. The self-construction which we hold so dearly. Me, I'm this kind of person, I'm that kind of person. Here's my definition. I'm not like you because I'm like this. And I love the quote from a Tibetan teacher I once heard who said, all of us, in spite of all of our differences, are the same. We belong to the same two-nose-hole society. All of us have become embodied in all these different ways in this particular lifetime. And all of us seem to have the yearning for home, to come back, to come home to the awakened heart, even if we can't conceptualize it. And then we try to conceptualize it and we get so lost. Jiajiao says no to the monk's question. And later, Wu Men writes a poem about it and says, with a bit of has or has not, body is lost, life is lost. Bodhisvaha, all gone, you can't make it happen, but you can surrender to what's been waiting for you all your life, which reveals itself once we get out of our own way. So simple. Zen practice is so simple. Whatever your particular practice is, the commonality is to keep coming back. You don't even have to conceptualize what you're coming back to. Sometimes we say the breath. Sometimes, if we're breath counting, coming to one. Sometimes to a koan phrase, what we call a huado, the little nugget that's at the center of every koan. So mu. And through that coming back again and again and again, everything arrives. We arrive on our own doorstep. The sun returns every morning. For now, the breath, the in-breath, the out-breath, followed by an in-breath again. Every time. So Hongzhu's verse, destroyed, not destroyed. Going along with that, the billion world universe. In their phrases, after all, there's no hook and chain action, in other words, no place to get caught. Their feet are much obstructed by entangling vines being a reference to all these words. And then Hongzhu says, do you understand? Or not. For a matter which is distinctly clear, punctiliousness, attention, is extreme. Those who know the heart bring it forth. Those who know the heart bring it forth. Bring it everywhere you go. Bring it to Doksan. Bring it to your chair and cushion. Bring it to your samu job, bring it to every single thing. This clarity, this is the only thing that's important. Right now, it'll get replaced by something else, and ultimately, as we're learning, who knows? Don't haggle, he says. You'll lose to me. Yes, let's all lose to Hongzhu. Instead of buying and selling at the market. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and make our half circle.
Sit and let these things go through, but of course there's so much I wanted to hold in that talk. But I was thinking, I think I understand better what I said yesterday. So the poet I worked on, Rilke, was a great advocate his whole life of the idea that death is not in the future. He says it's like the other side of the moon, it's just never turned towards us. Mm-hmm. We don't see it, but it's there. one of his many thoughts that could have come straight out of the mouth of a Zen master, I think. And that, for me, you know, I'm a little afraid that when you say something to a teacher, they always say the opposite back at you. But the place I've been getting stuck was the that the fire is at the end of the call. It's in the future. And it makes me think it's like someone saying, you're going to get hit by a bus. Just, you know, anytime, watch out. Well, yes, it could happen. But the thing that makes it possible for me to understand is that it's not. I mean, it is in the future, I suppose, in the koan, but you speak about it as if it is the other side of the moon. It's the absence that is already here. And that, to me, is actually so much more comprehensible, not quite the right word, but true, somehow. Because there really isn't a future or a past, right? You're always here thinking about them, but somehow they, you know, they're never in front of you.
Yeah, exactly, Will.
So that just was very helpful for me, and I realized that the fear evaporates mm-hmm. when I realize this isn't future.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, I love that metaphor of it's just the other side of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It reminds me of the Carlos Castaneda books, you know, mm-hmm. about you should always have death on your shoulder, the shaman says. And right, it's always here. It's always here because imagining the future is imagining.
Yeah.
And you're pointing that out very clearly. I can't figure out how to say the opposite of what you said, so I'll let one of the other people do it. Thank you.
Resonated for me was surrender, because I feel like I'm always trying to hold on or control things in a certain way. And, I think surrender to trusting is just spoke to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's always interesting if each one of us had to give a synopsis of this talk. It would be, right, everything is included. And wonderfully, you heard just the right Dharma talk, right? Melissa spoke right to you because of this work we've been doing. We're all tenderized and surrender lights up because you know surrender, the longing for surrender, and the impossibility of surrender, right? Like, how can I do it? I'm going to do it this time. I'm really good, right? And the wonderful thing about our practice is that we cannot do it, but it does us. And all of us here in this room have been forced to surrender. Not because we're such great spiritual athletes, because we run out of options, right? I keep going, but there's nothing left. And the wonderful gift of this nothing left and feeling this resonance in your heart. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Esther.
Thank you for reading the poem again at the end. The part about bringing your heart. I thought of the phrase somewhere else where it says, bring your mind to the teachers. Bring your heart to the practice. And bring all of it. And don't, I'm not sure I fully understand Hackle, but I guess it's like hesitate or like buying, selling, or something around.
Haggle, it's like when you try to I'm sure there's a word in Danish for it.
When
you say, how about if I give you $20 for this, and the price tag says $30.
Great. So I guess I got the sense.
You got the
sense.
So
here in Sishin, this practice of giving our heart and giving our all to everything, and not stand in the doorway and consider how much am I going to put in here, and you know this, like the benefit of what we do here and the rest of our lives, in particular in the domain of the heart, in the domain of love, in the domain of relationship. Can we give it our all, realizing there is really no other way? We've just made up some idea that we could, this idea of conditioned response, conditioned or conditional compassion. There's something we practice here that helps us. It's not transcend, it's penetrate more, go through that.
Yeah, well, and it's, yeah, so surrendering, you know, is one side of it in a way, mm-hmm. and receiving is the other side of it. If we're gonna keep saying things have two sides, destroyed, not destroyed. That's one reason why I wanted to read the Compassion Unbound piece by Yamada Kalam. And, you know, that the world loves us. Wait, what? No, come on. Right. But that capacity to give everything, surrender, and then to receive everything. This doesn't make any sense to the haggling mind, the bargaining mind. And yet, it makes sense to the heart.
I also think you know this, but it is possible to try to haggle your way through a sesshin. You know, I'll sit for 5 more minutes, and then Esther will ring the bell, and then I'm going to go get a snack. And we can, you know, and one more day, and we can count days, we can, you know, we can do all these little tricks. Mm-hmm. And what's lovely about a 7-day sesshin is that they stop working. Our haggling just comes to an invidious end, you know, it just gives up. And so, you know, there it is again, surrender. You know, I see the writing in the sky, surrender Dorothy, but it's surrender Alan, surrender Esther, you know, surrender Deb. And let, you know, the Surrender Society welcomes us.
I can't remember what teacher said this, but a contemporary teacher talked about everyone having a secret practice and was referring to this. You know, all have different ones. And I have admitted in the past, and will admit again, that I once spent 3 days of a 7-day sesshin writing a country and western song about Mu. It was fantastic. It had about 20 verses, and, you know, it really kept me preoccupied. And then it ran out. So I think we all have this secret practice. We don't admit it. It's helpful to admit it because that's one of the ingredients in its dissolution. You know, once we bring it out to the light, like, I'm really feeling this, and I'm just going over and over and over again the thing that she said and he said and I felt. And then it's one reason we have Doksan. You know, if we dare come in and say, so this is what's really going on for me. It doesn't look like being a good Zen student. And yet it is what we're looking for in a way, this radical honesty. This is how it is.
So, even if we think we're holding back, we're really giving everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to be simplistic, but it all seems to me it's just being with what is. And whatever it is, you'll find out, and then you can be with that. But trying to figure out what it will be is sort of frustrating.
Well, I would say, go ahead, be simplistic. this is, you know, it can be like bumper stickers in, right? You know, what did you say? Not to be simplistic, but
it's being with what is.
Being with what is. So you could put that on your card. Being with, I'm a Zen student, I am with what is. but it's really knowing this. You're speaking from a place of having tasted being with what is, and it is much simpler than all the malarkey that we put up with in these little pea brains of ours. Very much so.
It's so simple, and yet takes our utmost effort at the same time. Utterly no effort required, and your whole life energy to get here, where you've been the whole time.
Well, because really, I mean, I suspect you know this, but I think most of us know this, the habit mind of the ego construction is relentless and just keeps coming in and saying things like, oh, it can't be this simple, and all that stuff, right? We all have minds like this. So that's why we keep it simple.
I guess the part of your talk that for writing these summaries, the one that jumped out at me is really the longing and you know, this aspect of the man praying to Allah and the, you know, giving the example of the dogs barking for the master, the longing. And the longing that I think that I'm resonating with, it's the same longing that brought me here. It keeps me here, and it's going to take me home. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't have that like set object, mm-hmm. and it's no less of a longing.
Yeah, this such a mystery. What we're doing here, why we're here, but yet I think important to once in a while wonder, what is it, what do I really want, right? And to touch that longing, which is as we touch it, and we all have these energies in us, when we touch them, they're a fountain, a never-ending longing is my problem. A never-ending longing is the fuel, the rocket fuel that lights my fire, keeps me going, and this wonderful possibility of shifting. You know, you're here because you're an ill-adjusted human being. If you were well adjusted, you wouldn't need to do this. But this ill adjustment, this not fitting, it's not enough, it's not working, I'm not working, there has to be something. This is your great blessing, your distress. How wonderful.
I think this ill adjustment, too, is our great gift, you know. And the mind will say things, and psychologists and researchers will do studies about, well, here's the ideal way a child should be raised, you know, and gosh, if only my parents had done that or said this, and then, or if only this hadn't happened, there hadn't been death and there hadn't been loss or whatever it is off the point, because all that stuff is the longing and the Buddha Dharma. And boy, till the last breath, may it be so, right? To not get what you think you want, because that isn't what we really want. Yeah. And Rumi is great about that. You know, in Sufism, there's a lot of stuff. It's, of course, Islamic teachings, but so there's a lot of differences with Buddhism. But the essence quality is to burn up. To head right into the fire, you know, and not to be afraid, or to bring your fear with you, and just let it all burn up in the great kalpa fire. There's so much resonance for me in this koan. If it's all gonna burn up, what'll that be like? And then will it remain? Oh, wait a minute, right here, right now. right? It's already present. The burning is already present.
Yeah, I was taken too with this image of the howling dog from Rumi and the calling to Allah, and I don't often have the sense of the longing. I mean, often the subjective experience of being in my brain is just, you know. Yesterday during the Tay Show, it was just wanting to get on the floor and fall asleep. I just was so tired and just struggling.
Thank you.
it's my gift to you.
I touched someone.
And then feeling ashamed of that and disrespectful and more. And where I went with that, the longing, I thought like, yeah. It's like for me, this whole mess is that, that's the shape, that's the color, that's the look of the longing right now. It's like, whatever it is, this is me present. It's whatever way this is. And like, is there something under that? Is there some, maybe there doesn't need to be anything under it. That's just it.
And we did talk about being the Buddha of shame, right? Fully ashamed.
Yeah.
But we talk in a lot of the koans, the commentary, some of people say, fully exposed.
Yeah.
Fully it. This is it. No place to hide. So shame is present, or sleepiness is present, or sleepy Buddhas. A lot of sleepy Buddhas in the Sendo at various times. Nothing wrong with that. And it doesn't make sense because we're all, I think we're the heirs of the 19th century transcendentalists, the perfectibility of human beings, right? And the Puritans beyond before that, and it's our heritage, and it's a real trap. And Zen, and Buddhism, even Buddhism, standard Buddhism, which is where the teaching about the kalpas comes from. It seems like we're heading somewhere towards perfection. But what if we're already here, and this is what perfect is like? Maybe we're disappointed, because we have these wonderful ideas. But what if? What if this is it? Done. Perfectio. Done through.
I want to add, Matt, that, when you were talking about your brain, if all we had to bring to Sushin was our brains, we would be in so much trouble, But we bring our hearts to Sushin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm really hearing in you and in Paul, and that's the dog howling. This is where this is coming from.
Yeah.
And we say something like present, and it's kind of neutral, but present with this wide open heart, that's a little bit more meaty, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we come here and, Hongzhi says, mind and body are one substance. And so we come here with that one substance. And that's what we bring to the party.
Yeah.
And the longing, too, I think, it's not something we need to get on the other side of.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually a relationship between the word longing and be longing.
Mm-hmm.
And the B is an emphasis of the longing. And if we can just, we don't have to understand that from an etymological perspective, but just understand that the longing is not a problem. It is it's how we connect with belonging, with this, with everything.
So let's end here. Let's come back into our sitting posture, redo the place